shadowy flight into a dangerous world of a man who does not exist. Michael Knight.
What? What do you mean, wrong night? We're doing Knight Rider in September? Really? Yeah, right.
Well, anyway, join us for our anniversary episode, Nightcast, focusing on director extraordinaire M. Night Shyamalan and his new film, The Happening. I'd like to introduce you to my friend, the co-creator of Star Trek Errors, TwerpCast, and the man who made Twerp Online Productions possible, Jim Caswell. By the way, he has really bad gas, so if I don't make it through this TwerpCast, you know why.
And I'm here to introduce Doug Zeitlin, destined to be the first great director of the 22nd century. It's too bad he'll be dead long before his work is ever truly appreciated or seen.
That still puts me a step above Joel Schumacher. Jim, can you believe it's been a year already?
Yes. Yes, I can.
We'd like to thank our loyal listeners for staying with us a whole year.
Both of you.
And ask, haven't you got a life yet? It's been a really good year. We've had some pretty fun episodes, and we've had some moments of insight. It's too bad we didn't share those with any of the listeners.
Isn't editing grand?
For those of you who are just starting or only recent listeners, I'd like to go over some of the highlights from the past year and suggest that you go back and listen to a few of our previous episodes. One of my favorite moments is our Lindsay Lohan live interview. Man, she was like something else. But also making my top 10 list is the Bruce Campbell Lifetime Achievement VCast. In addition, I was just shocked that we were able to get the Royal Shakespeare Theater to do their rendition of Star Trek Eras Episode 1, The Big Bang. That just is marvelous.
With special guest appearance by Patrick Stewart himself.
But my personal favorite actually was the roundtable discussion with all the former Doctor Who actors. That Tom Baker has a wicked sense of humor.
The difficult part on that one was the channeling of William Hartnell. So if you missed any of those episodes, please feel free, pause here, go into our previous episode section, hunt those episodes down, and give them a listen. You won't believe your ears.
Thanks for listening to those. I hope you got as big a kick of listening to them as we did creating them. For our first TwerpCast, Jim and I picked probably one of our favorite writers, directors, creators of the modern era, and that was Joss Whedon. So to start our second year, we're following the same format, choosing another one of our favorite writer, creator, directors, M. Night Shyamalan.
M. Night was actually born in India, but raised in Pennsylvania. His family had been living in the United States. His mother went back to India, essentially long enough to give birth to him, and at only about 3 or 4 weeks old, she brought him back to the United States, and he was essentially raised in Pennsylvania. This is very key because he uses Pennsylvania as a backdrop in every one of his movies to date. He states that he always wanted to be a filmmaker, even though his father, who was a doctor, wanted him to follow him into medicine. He's a humongous fan of Steven Spielberg, and by the time he was 17, he made 45 amateur films. If you're big on buying the DVD releases of his films, one of his amateur films is usually featured on the DVD release, with the only exception being Lady in the Water. He graduated from New York University's Tisch School of the Arts in 1992. It was also in 1992 that he produced his first film, which is a little-known and very, very hard to come by, Praying with Anger. That was his graduation project and was taken to the Cannes Film Festival. So all of that being said, Doug, what are some of the reasons why you like him as a director?
It's a very telling statement that you've said he's a fan of Steven Spielberg. In a small extent, you can see some of the facial reactions and some of his development as a director come from Steven Spielberg, but I think that's just the beginning. I think really where Spielberg has left off and said, you know what I'm going to focus on is the special effects-driven movies, Knight has said, I want to make movies about people. They're in extraordinary circumstances. They're things that we couldn't deal with or shouldn't have to deal with. And how would real people react to these situations? Which, once upon a time, was Steven Spielberg's strength. Despite the continued success of Indiana Jones and the Kingdom of the Crystal Skull, it's not actually that good a movie. The characters in there are superhuman. It's not like Henry Jones is an unextraordinary man in extraordinary circumstances. He is a superhero in a superhero movie. Whereas in The Happening, Mark Wahlberg's character, Elliot Moore, is an everyman. He is a high school teacher. He's just a regular Joe who's thrust into the event happening.
He is such an everyman that there's one point in the movie where he gets overwhelmed with everything that's going on around him. And he has to take a break. He has to say, everybody just leave me alone and let me think. He's only human, and he doesn't have all of the answers right away. He's a very smart man, but he gets frustrated, and he gets afraid, and he gets confused, just like anybody else.
And I have to assume, since Knight is actually the writer and director of his own movies, that he gets this everyman feeling from himself. That he doesn't think, I am this super director. I am Steven Spielberg. In his own way, he must still see himself as that everyman and wanting to show his experience on the screen. And I think that's what I really like about Knight. He's able to convey everyday people. I think the worst part of The War of the Worlds was the fact you weren't able to believe Tom Cruise was an everyman.
For M. Night's characters, even those that are superhuman, they have such a human quality to them. I'm thinking of his film Unbreakable. Bruce Willis's character was superhuman, but at the same time, he was very human.
Ultimately, I think that's key to the success of The Sixth Sense, is the fact that the only person during that whole movie who knew that Bruce Willis was dead was the kid. The audience saw him as a living, breathing human being the entire movie. Well, I've compared him to Steven Spielberg. He's more than just a one-trick pony. He has the ability of a thriller director, much like, say, Alfred Hitchcock, to bring you in and to make you feel the suspense. He holds you on the edge of your seat in a way that we don't really have in modern movie making right now. I have to say, one of the things that I like about him is probably one of the things that other people don't necessarily like about him, but he holds long camera shots. He has long, dramatic pauses. There's not this need to have the MTV cut, 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 cut mentality. He can have a single shot that lasts for several minutes.
Your reference to him as being Hitchcockian is very appropriate. A lot of his films have a Hitchcock feel to them. He's big into creating suspenseful stories, thriller stories, that will keep you on the edge of your seat. The Happening has a very The Birds feel to it, of nature turning against mankind.
He really has established himself as a suspense director. Now, I think he has a problem because of The Sixth Sense that people want him to be the twist-ending director also.
The fact of the matter is, though, that he hasn't truly had a twist ending since Unbreakable. Signs didn't really have a twist ending. The Village didn't have a twist ending. Lady in the Water did not have a twist ending to it. The Happenings doesn't have a twist ending to it. It just so happened that the first two movies that he became well known for had twist endings, and therefore he became the twist ending director.
I think he's having a real problem living this down, because his movies have been excellent. He is very consistent in bringing you a well-thought-out, a well-established movie, but they're straightforward, and if you're sitting there at the ending of the movie, the credits are rolling, you're like, where was the twist? Then you really miss the point, is it's not a twist-ending movie. It's just a straightforward alien invasion movie. It's Independence Day on the ground. The irony there is Independence Day made a ton more money than Signs, and Signs is probably a better written, better directed, better acted movie.
He is struggling right now with trying to live down this reputation. And the fact that two-thirds of his movies haven't been twists doesn't seem to matter. I think one of the keys here, though, is that people are trying to pigeonhole him into the role of the twist director, because the thing that would be better at describing him confuses a lot of people, and that's that he is more of a thinking man's director. He creates movies that make you puzzle about what is going on in the film. He doesn't lay everything out for you. Here's step A, here's step B, here's step C. Paint-by-numbers types of films. He actually expects the audience to follow along and figure out what's going on. M. Night Shyamalan's films are not that easy to summarize. You can see a 20-minute preview of the film and still not know for certain what's going to be happening within that movie.
I guess you could argue that both ways, that that's a good thing and a bad thing. Are the movies too complex to actually be widely released? Do they need to be art house movies? They're not art house movies, but do they need to be? Does he need to kick it up a notch and say, you know what, I just can't do a general release movie?
He does have a certain art house quality to him. The fact that he has attained mass market appeal thanks to The Sixth Sense is almost an anomaly.
There are outhouse directors out there that do fine work, but that nobody ever sees, except for, like, three people.
As far as that goes, I'm glad that he had The Sixth Sense. I'm glad that he was able to achieve as much mass market appeal as he did, because, to be honest, I don't go to the art houses. I don't go to see those types of films, usually. I feel as though it's a special privilege to be let in on that little bit of world going to my local movie theater.
In a completely opposite directorial style is somebody like Kevin Smith, who has that real strong New Jersey background. He writes his movies set in New Jersey. He writes, directs, produces his own movies. He's the other guy that does this. And some of his movies are really art house intended. I mean, Clerks, despite its critical success, it's not an everyman movie. But what I think Kevin Smith really wants is to do the movie that's going to make everybody universally laugh. I think he wants to direct a movie that's like a Will Ferrell movie or like a Steve Carell movie or something that everybody is going to fall out of their seats laughing. But he's actually too smart for that. It's really hard to write at a level that's dumb enough for Will Ferrell. Well, you know, if 1,000 chimpanzees, 1,000 typewriters in 1,000 years could write Shakespeare, you really only need one deaf, dumb, and blind monkey to write a Will Ferrell movie.
You forgot about the part where he's using only an Etch-a-Sketch.
Yes, thank you. I did forget that.
You mentioned that M. Night writes his own movies. He directs his own movies. He produces his own movies. And, yeah, Kevin Smith is in that list as well. There aren't a lot of people that do the triple threat like that in this day and age. Back in the days of Alfred Hitchcock, it happened all the time. But in modern-day Hollywood, I can count the number of directors who do that on one hand.
There's some of them are really good at what they do. Christopher Nolan, who, yes, I think people really know for Batman Begins. But if you haven't seen Memento, you've really missed an awesome storytelling experience.
You want to talk about a movie that has a twist ending to it? That one has a twist ending to it.
Absolutely. I love Christopher Nolan. I have just a marvelous triple threat director. Did I mention George Lucas?
You mentioned Kevin Smith, Robert Rodriguez, Quentin Tarantino.
There are some people out there that are the triple threats, but also only act or only direct, depending on the occasion. Speaking of triple threat directors, you've got people like Kevin Costner, who's a terrible actor, a terrible writer, and a terrible director.
The number of people who do all of these jobs on the same movie aren't that high, and the number that are able to do it well drops dramatically. Yes, you have your Kevin Costners, you have your Mel Gibsons, you have your Clint Eastwoods, who have been actors for 30 years, and just by being around the industry long enough, they've picked up things here and there and have become directors and producers and occasionally writers.
I think that list is actually very telling. Mel Gibson got pretty lucky with Braveheart. He was just as unlucky with Apocalypto.
I guess what my point is that these directors like M. Night Shyamalan, they've been doing it from the beginning, and they've been doing it well from the beginning. It's not something that they were in the industry for 2 decades and realized, oh, well, here, I can expand my repertoire. In all of their cases, they hit the ground running and were doing it well from the very beginning. So, now that we're finally in agreement, let's talk about the movies that M. Night Shyamalan has created prior to The Happening. His pre-fame films, Praying with Anger in 1992, his graduation project, and Wide Awake, which he made in 1995 and was released in 1998, are really those art house movies. It is next to impossible to try to get copies of these things. I went out of my way to try to find copies of them so that I could view them prior to this recording, and I couldn't find them anywhere.
So, really, where we start with our mini-reviewing would be The Sixth Sense. I don't know how much of a review is really necessary of this movie. It's pretty obvious it was a critical success, a financial success, an audience success. Just about everybody out there gave it the 4 stars out of 4.
I'll even go so far as to say 5 out of 4 pens in the pocket protector. I just adored this movie. In spite of the twist ending, I can still sit down and watch this film and just enjoy it.
It's a perfect storm film. everything came together at the right time, at the right place. It was exactly what it needed to be. And I know I've listened to the audio commentary, and Knight can find fault with his own material. But that's really nitpicking. This is, in my opinion, a perfect movie.
So, The Sixth Sense was released in 1999. He quickly followed that up with Unbreakable in 2000. And again, wonderful movie. Honestly, I really wish that M. Night Shyamalan would do more films with Bruce Willis. That was his perfect combination, it seems. There's something about M. Night Shyamalan directing Bruce Willis that makes them both really shine.
I do have one complaint about Unbreakable. And that is, I think it's not as accessible to the MTV audience, those people who are expecting the really quick cuts and the really short scenes. It is a very long movie, and it is very slow. However, it's absolutely brilliant. This is the best take of the superhero movie in the 20th century. Despite the fact that it's not directly accessible, the characters are. You don't need to be a Marvel zombie. You don't need to be a DC hero. If you enjoy a movie, if you enjoy a well-told story, you can enjoy Unbreakable. You don't have to be that superhero fan.
Following Unbreakable was Signs in 2002 with Mel Gibson.
I think the only thing that really hurt this movie is it didn't have the twist ending. After The Sixth Sense and after Unbreakable, Knight was pigeonholed. He was that director who was going to bring you a movie, have a really quick twist at the ending, and the whole thing was going to change for you. This movie did not have this. This was a movie about an alien invasion, and it was a straightforward setting about a family in a small town near Philadelphia. What would they do if there were an alien invasion?
Actually, I agree more with the second statement than with the first. The backdrop, yes, is an alien invasion, but this movie isn't about an alien invasion. It is about the family. It is about the father who is dealing with loss. And perhaps even more dramatically, it's about a pastor who has lost faith. He doesn't know why he's lost his wife. He doesn't know why he's there. He doesn't know why all of the things that have happened in the past year have happened. And it's through this movie and through this experience that he's able to embrace everything that has happened and come to the realization there is a purpose, there is a reason. If there was a twist ending to this film, and I don't think it was a twist ending, it's the fact that everything comes together and he's able to regain his faith, both in humanity and in God. I think it's just such a wonderful human piece.
Losing your faith is something that people really go through. Losing your loved ones is something that people really go through. Alien invasion is not. And so he is able to take these ordinary people and put them in this extraordinary circumstances. And not only do they survive, but they can heal as well.
Focusing in on ordinary people in extraordinary situations, The Village came out in 2004. A lot of people saw this as a period piece, and again, I think that's where M. Night suffered in that it didn't deliver what was apparent on the surface. And for a lot of people, they don't look beyond the surface, so they got confused and the film suffered for it.
It really is terribly underrated. I love Joaquin Phoenix. Dallas Bryce Howard is probably one of the most attractive, one of the best performers, just an absolute marvel to behold on the screen. I personally can't wait to see each new movie or each new role she's going to take.
M. Night Shyamalan can definitely be given credit for quote-unquote discovering Dallas Bryce Howard. Yes, she's Ron Howard's daughter, and yes, she's since been seen in Spider-Man 3, but with her being featured in both The Village and Lady in the Water, she really stood out as a phenomenal actress long before she was Gwen Stacy.
Honestly, it's not as good as Sixth Sense and not as good as Unbreakable. It's a really well-told story. It's just a story of one person overcoming their limitation and proving their abilities. Probably suffers because, again, doesn't have a twist. There's some supernatural MacGuffins in the movie, but it's not a supernatural movie. I personally joke and say this movie has a surprise middle, because it really does. And again, maybe this is what throws people off, is the fact that it leads you down the path to think that the main character in the movie is Joaquin Phoenix. And then all of a sudden, in the middle, boom, it's not.
That is far more of a twist than the fact that it's set in modern day.
Absolutely. That really took me by surprise.
So M. Night discovers Dallas in time for The Village, and follows it up by casting her as the lead character in Lady in the Water in 2006.
Lady in the Water is exactly what Knight said it was going to be. He said this is a fairy tale, this is a story that he created for his children, and he wanted to share this with America. It's not a twist movie, it's not a suspense movie, it's just a well-told little story. I love Paul Giamatti, love Dallas Bryce Howard. It's really an ensemble movie, and it's just so well put together, and it bombed in every way possible, and I don't understand it, because it's a really fun movie.
Lady in the Water is the perfect example of how critics specifically and the movie-going population in general really can't get their heads out of their own butts.
I saw this movie opening night, and I knew it was going to be a failure opening night, not because of the size of the audience, but because in one of my favorite scenes in the movie, the character playing the critic gets killed off horribly. This man is a jerk. This man is self-centered, arrogant, and is everything that people really hate about movie critics. And when he was killed off, I was like, that's the end of this movie because it will receive no positive reviews.
And it didn't. I loved this movie, and I have to sit and shake my head and wonder why people can't see something of quality in front of them when it's laid out on a buffet table.
Part of Lady in the Water's failure really has to do with American movie audiences being sheep. If you're told by a critic a movie is good, you go see it. If you're told by a movie critic a movie is bad, you skip it.
I gave my rating for Sixth Sense.
Yeah, 5 pens out of 4 in Pocket Protector.
Unbreakable?
5 pens out of 4 in the Pocket Protector.
Agreed. Signs?
Probably 3 or 4.
Yes, I would agree with that. 3 or 4. Village?
3 or 4.
Again, agreed. Lady in the Water?
3.5 out of 4. I got a real kick out of Lady in the Water.
Okay. Again, I'll agree.
Now, if you do want to see an M. Night Shyamalan comedy, in 2004, Sci-Fi Channel ran a quote-unquote unauthorized biography of M. Night Shyamalan called The Buried Secret of M. Night Shyamalan.
Now, remember that this is being released at the exact same time as The Village. It was a direct tie-in. This was a Sci-Fi Channel production intended to draw people into the theater to see The Village.
I call it a comedy not because it was directly funny. It wasn't written to be a ha-ha laugh riot, but it was essentially all sorts of famous actors and all sorts of his cast and crew talking about what kind of special mental powers that M. Night Shyamalan had and all sorts of weird things that happened on the set.
How all of his movies are tied directly into his own life, that at one point he died and came back to life, and he gained all these powers, and that he's really being subversive for a supernatural cult.
It's a piece of really amusing fiction.
The problem is that I don't think it was meant to be funny.
Then I have nothing good to say about it.
As much as it was intended to help promote The Village, I think it did an equal amount of damage to it. Simply because there were people who were M. Night Shyamalan fans who were truly tuning in to learn more about the director, only to be presented with this piece of fiction that came across kind of insulting, both to M. Night Shyamalan and to the audience. And I think it turned a lot of people off. I remember watching it and just going, what is this tripe? And is there a joke here that I'm just not getting? And there was even build-up leading up to it where M. Night Shyamalan was supposedly trying to distance himself from it because it was so insulting to him and really building up the show to be such a large disappointment. And I really do think that it turned people off from going to see the movie.
Well, then I do have something good to say about it. It was on the Sci-Fi Channel, and therefore almost nobody saw it.
This, of course, is counterbalanced by M. Night Shyamalan's other TV appearance, which, strangely enough, was an American Express commercial shown during the 2006 Oscars. I, being the Oscars fan that I am, saw the first broadcast, which was the only time that they showed the commercial in its entirety. It was a solid 2 to 3 minute commercial, and it was truly weird. But I completely understood where M. Night Shyamalan was coming from. He was trying to make something that was just odd and out there. And that's why American Express went to him and asked him to produce this commercial, was because they knew it was going to be odd and weird and out there. And again, nobody got it.
We've said some really, really good things about the films that we've seen. We've said some not-so-good things about his television work. And I think going into the negative is kind of a good place to talk about The Happening.
Let's start with the things that we liked about it.
It was written, directed, and produced by M. Night Shyamalan.
I thought Mark Wahlberg did a phenomenal job.
You know, I always thought Marky Mark and the Funky Bunch was something that happened to your underwear. And for those of you old enough to recognize that reference, yes, Mark Wahlberg was an incredibly terrible rap star before he got into movies.
For an incredibly bad white rapper.
He's an actually good actor. I don't know where that came from, but for being an incredibly talentless rapper is actually a very good actor. Who would have figured?
Mark Wahlberg, as an actor, continues to impress me. I haven't seen everything that he's been in. He's not to the point where I go, it's a Mark Wahlberg film, I need to go see it. But in the things that I've seen, I've been surprised. I've been shocked as to how good he is. And this movie continued to impress me.
When I first heard that Mark Wahlberg was going to start acting, and I really think his big break came from M. Night Shyamalan in The Sixth Sense, and only a very small role, but it was a big breakout for him. I really expected him to be just as crappy as an actor as he was a rap singer. And every time I've seen him, I have been impressed and gone, wow, he's not bad. I don't think he's necessarily ready for an Academy Award, but I think he could be. I think he's somebody who really can develop that craft and be that guy. So that's something that we both agree with, that Mark Wahlberg just did an outstanding job yet again. John Leguizamo, I think, comes from a place much like Robin Williams. I very much enjoy his comedy, but now when I see him as an actor, I take him very seriously as an actor. Again, he has mastered that craft as well.
There is very, very, very little that is humorous about John Leguizamo's performance in this movie, and it doesn't suffer at all from it. He doesn't have to be cracking jokes for you to like him in this. And the fact that he can be taken seriously as a dramatic actor is phenomenal.
And I'd also like to talk about Zooey Deschanel. She has incredibly beautiful eyes. No, that's it. I don't want to say anything else nice about her.
I liked Zooey in Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. I don't quite know why I liked her, but I liked her. And I could go on for easily 15, 20 minutes about how talented I think her sister is, who plays the lead character on Bones. But Zooey gets credit for being a better actress than I actually think she is.
That's a statement that I really wholeheartedly want to agree with. She is way overrated. I do not remember hating her in Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. I remember thinking that was a really cute movie. Not great, just a cute, funny movie. And Tin Man, I just wanted to go, what were they thinking? She's the only one in this movie who has no talent. And she struck me in The Happening also as being a pretty talentless hack. An attractive talentless hack, but talentless nonetheless. That being said, Emily Deschanel, I think, is an incredibly talented actress. Not nearly as attractive, but an incredibly talented actress.
When she's part of the ensemble and not carrying the movie, she's actually better. In both The Tin Man and in The Happening, she is a lead character. Of all the characters that are introduced in The Happening, her and Mark Wahlberg are really the only two that are on the screen from beginning to end. I think that's too much of a demand on her as an actress. She can't carry it. As a supporting character, I think she actually does better.
I'd be willing to give her a chance as an ensemble member. I don't believe she will ever pull off a leading role successfully. However, I wouldn't not see a movie because it's got her in it.
Which, if you're keeping track on your scorecard at home, yes, we have officially switched over into the things that we didn't quite like.
I didn't like the fact that it was R. It was completely unnecessary to tell this story. There are a couple of scenes in the movie that are very gory. And literally, if you cut, say, 3 to 5 seconds out of this movie, you could make it a PG-13 flick.
Which is very disheartening, because I remember reading an article with M. Night Shyamalan where he said that he purposely left those scenes in. He knew that he could have cut this little bit of time out and turned it into a PG-13, but he didn't feel as though it would have as much of a dramatic effect as with them in it. I agree with you. It would have been better without them. Leaving those 2 to 3 seconds up to the viewer's imagination would have been so much more powerful than the special effects that they used to actually show the gore.
Both Jim and I grew up long after the era of the radio program and the theater of the mind experience. I think, nevertheless, we're both big fans of the old-time radio, that we've gone back and made it part of our arsenal of entertainment that we enjoy.
To the point where we developed twerps.
Exactly. That being said, theater is a visual medium. There were many scenes in this movie that absolutely were necessary for the story, to motivate the characters, to move the plot along. The moments of gore in this movie were extraneous. They did not develop the story. They did not carry the story further along. In fact, rather than making the movie scarier, they probably made it a little less scary. It was kind of like, oh, that's over. There is one scene towards the beginning of the movie, and sometimes we're very bad about spoiling, and this time I'm going to try and stay away from that because I love Knight's work. But there's a scene towards the very beginning of the movie where you just hear the death. You don't actually see much of it, but you just hear the regularity of the characters dying, and you know what's happening. And it's so much more impactful than later scenes in the movie where you see somebody intentionally committing an act of suicide, which is very gory, but didn't add anything to the story.
It would have had far more of an impact on me to not see the lions tearing the guy apart. And I don't feel bad about revealing that because that's hinted at in the commercials.
That is a perfect example of the scene being so distracting. The way that the scene works is the camera starts out in the tiger cage, and the camera's pulling out as the man is taunting the lion. And you see all the people in horror watching what's going on. They realize that this man is about to get eaten. And when the camera finally pulls all the way out, it's behind the zoo audience watching. All of a sudden, there's the scream as the women and children are watching in horror, and you haven't seen it. You just see the reactions, and you're like, whoa, that guy just got eaten. And then there's a scene cut, and you go back to where you see the guy partially mauled, and he's bleeding, and they're going after him again. And I'm like, didn't need that scene cut. When you see everybody in the zoo crying and screaming, it was enough to let you know that guy just got ate.
I almost felt cheated that he could have allowed the audience to use their own imaginations, but it's almost like he didn't feel as though he had enough faith in his audience to allow them to imagine it, so he had to give them the visual. That's not M. Night Shyamalan. That's not part of his arsenal, and it was a detraction from the movie. In several instances, not just with the gore, but in the storytelling in general, there was a feeling of Knight questioning whether or not his audience was going to get it or not. It's almost as if he's been too exposed to mainstream audiences, and he's realized, people don't get me, so I have to explain things more. As fans of his, we almost feel as though, no, you don't have to explain it to us. We get it.
A lot more of the movie was telegraphed than normal. Having that experience, I mean, that's what 90% of the movies are. I mean, we're so used to mediocrity in the movie-going experience that having a little telegraphing doesn't necessarily ruin the experience for me. I feel he doesn't need it. I think that word mediocrity is actually the perfect word for this. This was not an M. Night Shyamalan horror gore-fest movie. And it was not M. Night Shyamalan thriller, keep you on the edge of your seat movie. It was, let's try and make something in between. Let's be mediocre in both genres.
I would probably be less upset about it if I thought that it was actually going to help him attain a commercial success. But I don't think it's going to. I don't think it's going to help him sell more tickets. I mean, let's face facts. They're releasing this in the middle of summer during the exact same week as The Incredible Hulk. There's no way that he's going to walk away from this weekend with the number one blockbuster film.
Being a very big fan, having seen it first showing or the first day of its release, I can tell you, I don't even see it being in the top three. He'd be lucky to be in the top five.
So the compromises that he made, I feel, are going to be wasted. And that's the part that really bothers me. I hate to see an artist compromise on his work and not have anything to show for it.
I honestly don't think it's bad to bubblegum your music. I love the Monkees. The stuff that they did that was bubblegum and fluff, and it was just for the American audience to pick up a new 45, I don't mind that. There are some incredibly commercial films out there that I absolutely love. On the other hand, there are movies that are absolutely incredible that nobody ever sees because A, they're in the art house, or B, the critics said, don't bother with this movie. So in this case, he compromised, but he didn't achieve that incredibly successful status. He did not make a Pirates of the Caribbean, despite the fact that he compromised.
I would have felt better if he had left some questions to be answered by the audience.
Sometimes that bothers me and sometimes it doesn't. There are movies out there like Donnie Darko, which the ending has left me completely unsatisfied ever since I saw it. I mean, it's a great little flick, but there are too many questions in my mind.
I could have lived with a couple of questions in The Happening. You don't have to tell me everything, but also don't leave me so in the dark that I'm scratching my head going, what did I just see?
And in a way, this movie actually does both. It's incredibly telegraphed so that the story doesn't leave you questions, but you're just going, what the heck was that? Was that an M. Night film? What was that?
I really hope that this isn't a sign of things to come. I really hope that after Night's next film, he's able to get back to telling stories like Sixth Sense, Unbreakable, Signs, The Village, Lady in the Water. Release the films in October. Release the movies in March. I don't care. I'll go see them. But if it means dumbing things down to release it during the blockbuster season, I'd rather go see it in October.
I would personally rather have the number one hit 4 weeks in a row in October than have a movie that comes out in June and doesn't even hit the top five.
The Sixth Sense had no expectations put on it, and it was phenomenal. I think the studios want him to be the next Steven Spielberg, and as much as he may have idolized the man, he's not Steven Spielberg, and he shouldn't be.
When you compare this to Steven Spielberg's recent work, I would still say The Happening is better than War of the Worlds, better than Minority Report, it's better than AI. I still like M. Night Shyamalan more than the recent Steven Spielberg we've been forced to put up with.
In spite of the fact that I'm probably going to give this the same rating as I gave Indiana Jones.
Mediocre M. Night Shyamalan movies are still better than most of the mediocre crap that comes out the rest of the summer.
I'll even go so far as to say that mediocre M. Night Shyamalan after only six movies is as good as mediocre Steven Spielberg, who's been in the business for 30 years.
I guess it's important to say that this movie is more disappointing as a night movie than it is as a piece of entertainment.
Yes, one of the difficulties that we have is that we were expecting so much more, and therefore the movie had farther to fall. If this had been any other director, we might not be as harsh to it.
If this had been any other director, we probably wouldn't have seen it. That being said, truthfully, I would only give it 2 pens in the pocket protector.
Again, same here. 2 pens in the pocket protector. And I really hope that this is the downside of the trend and that things don't sink any further than this.
With a movie like The Last Airbender coming up,
this is something odd for M. Night. As we spent a good deal of time talking about earlier, he writes his own stuff, he directs his own stuff, he produces his own stuff. This is the first movie that M. Night Shyamalan has ever done that is based upon somebody else's property. He's doing a live-action version of an anime film, and potentially this is going to be his first truly commercial venture ever. Because as much as Sixth Sense was a commercial success, it wasn't a commercial endeavor.
Talking about eye candy, the 2007 Transformers is an incredible success for Michael Bay, an incredible success for the studio. It did exactly what they wanted it to do. Can M. Night Shyamalan do that with an anime show? Maybe. The only reason I would even go see it is because his name's attached to it.
I think as a director, he has the capability of doing a phenomenal job with this film. I know nothing about the source material other than the fact that it airs occasionally on Cartoon Network and the fact that it's based on Japanese anime. But making movies based on comic book characters and or cartoon characters is incredibly popular right now. This may be his blockbuster. This may be the movie that he hits $100 million mark with. I don't know. It's too soon to tell. And I will say now that this is probably going to be the movie that either makes him or breaks him.
Unfortunately, true.
Which may mean that he'll end up in art houses where maybe he belongs. I don't know. He'll be one of those few directors that I'd actually go to an art house to see his movie for, though.
Well, if you'll drive an hour to Chicago to see Bubba Hotep, because it's the only movie theater that has it, you'll drive an hour to Chicago to see an M. Night Shyamalan movie. if you haven't rented Bubba Hotep yet, what planet are you living on?
Hello, Bruce Campbell. We talked about him in the beginning. So it seems only appropriate that we started the show talking about Bruce Campbell. We end the show talking about Bruce Campbell. Which is odd for a show dedicated to M. Night Shyamalan, but hey, it's our anniversary show. You should expect odd by now. Upcoming TWERP projects. Basically, every show that we are producing is currently in post-production. It's in the hands of the sound editors, and quite frankly, I'm not going to make any promises. They all have lives, people. The only thing that I can promise is sometime within the next month or so, we'll probably be back with another TWERP cast.
As always, we thank you for listening and encourage your feedback. Please write Jim at twerponline.net.
TWERPcast is a production of Timewell Electronic Recording Productions. Copyright 2008. Thanks for listening, everybody.